In this week's market update, analysts are the most bullish in 20 years as earnings continue to beat expectations. Dividends rebound, China reassures investors, and house prices surge. This week's roundup is a collection of good news. Now, that's sometimes a worrying indicator in investment, but sometimes it's just, well, good news. First up, earnings season continues to beat expectations. We're a little over halfway through the most widely tracked results over in the US, and profits continue to beat forecasts by a wide margin. Even better, the outlook for the rest of the year and even next year too is improving. So far, earnings are about 86% better than they were in the same three-month period, April to June, last year. It's the best performance on this count since the final quarter of 2009. As with this year's recovery from the worst of the pandemic, that period was a year on from the low point of the financial crisis. Earnings are rising fast, in large part because revenues are growing at a record pace, up 21% year on year. With costs under control, that's feeding through into a proportionately bigger increase in earnings, thanks to what's called operational leverage. Earnings are about 18 percentage points better than expectations. It's not unusual for earnings to beat forecasts thanks to companies managing expectations, but the margin is usually something like 3-5%. So, either companies and the analysts they guide are getting it badly wrong, or the economy is improving much more quickly than expected, or most likely a bit of both. Revenue beats are also much bigger than usual. Sales growth is nearly 5 percentage points better than expected. The usual margin of error is about 1%. The good news is that it's not just the second quarter that's better than expected. The expectation for the third quarter is earnings growth of 28%. A month ago, it was 25%. For the fourth quarter, growth is penciled in at 20%. At the start of July, it was just 17%. It's early days yet, but analysts are now starting to think that they may have underestimated 2022 profits too. As they try to catch up with the changing earnings backdrop, there's been a flurry of new buy recommendations. According to Morgan Stanley, the percentage of buy ratings is now close to 60%, which is the highest it's been since regulatory changes, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, was introduced after the bursting of the dot-com bubble, putting pressure on brokers to be less routinely bullish in their stock recommendations. This is the backdrop to markets hitting new highs. The S&P 500 index is around 4,400, close to its best ever. The FTSE 100 is 7,100, at the top of its recent range, if still some way off its all-time best, reached before the pandemic and the finalisation of Brexit. This week's earnings focus on this side of the Atlantic is on the insurance sector. Results from AXA in France, Generali in Italy and Allianz in Germany are due, while here in the UK both Hiscox and Direct Line are announcing. So, earnings are the first bit of good news. Next is dividends, with 2021 shaping up to be a year of strong recovery after a challenging 2020 in which banks were ordered not to make payouts to shareholders and other big dividend payers were forced to rein in their payments thanks to the pandemic and a plunging oil price in the case of, for example, Shell. In the UK, typically one of the best markets for high dividends, the FTSE 100 now yields well over 3% and is heading back to the 4% level it paid before the pandemic. Equity income funds, which focus on companies that pay higher than average dividends, are therefore in a position to offer investors between 4 and 5% yields. In a low interest rate world, that's obviously very attractive. Dividend cover, which measures the comfort with which companies can make a payment to shareholders, is a healthy 1.5 times. In other words, for every £1 of dividend, companies have £1.50 of earnings. Some of the traditional dividend-paying sectors are in much better shape this year than last. Banks, for example, are benefiting from an improving economy, fewer bad loans, and wider lending margins. House prices are rising, which also helps bank profitability. Mining companies are also in a strong position as commodity prices rise on the back of the post-pandemic recovery. The oil companies are able to reward their shareholders as the oil price hits new highs after last year's collapse. The third piece of good news, if you happen to be a homeowner, that is a worldwide boom in house prices. Almost everywhere, Prices are rising, with just 3 of 40 markets tracked by the OECD experiencing real inflation-adjusted falls in house prices in the first 3 months of 2021. That's the lowest proportion since 2000. Prices rose at an annualised average of 9.4% in the rich nations captured by the OECD data. That's the fastest pace of growth for 30 years, faster even than the growth that preceded the financial crisis in the years leading up to 2008. Prices are rising because of continuing accommodative financial conditions with record low interest rates. Another reason is the number of people, especially among the better off who are best placed to buy houses, who've accumulated large savings during the pandemic and have chosen to move to bigger properties thanks to their experiences in lockdown. Finally, there's an ongoing lack of supply and rising building costs. The fourth piece of good news is a reversal of one of the biggest negative stories in the markets in recent weeks: China's regulatory clampdown on a range of sectors, including tech stocks and private education companies. The outlook cleared a bit over the weekend as the China Securities Regulatory Commission said it was seeking closer cooperation with Washington in a bid to improve transparency after its recent actions had seen share prices tumble and a China discount start to emerge among international investors. China has been trying recently to exert greater control on the big tech companies, which are as powerful in their domestic market as their counterparts are in the US. China said last month that it would review all foreign listings by Chinese companies, announcing its crackdown just days after the $4.4 billion listing of ride-hailing group Didi Chuxing. Then it dealt a massive blow to the $100 billion private tutoring sector as it sought to limit the profits that companies can make in a sector that has attempted to capitalise on the desire of China's growing middle class to give their children an edge in the country's highly competitive education system. China's more reassuring tone this weekend will have eased some of the pressure on a stock market which has lagged well behind booming Western markets so far this year. Foreign investors in particular have become more nervous about the political and regulatory risks of investing in China, which appear to have grown significantly in the past couple of years. Beijing has always tried to balance its social goals with its support for a financial sector that's increasingly opening up to the outside world. Currently, it seems that its concerns about addressing the country's demographic time bomb by removing obstacles to families having more children is trumping the predictability of some high-flying stock market sectors. In terms of economic and policy announcements this week, the highlights are likely to be Friday's non-farm payroll data in the US. Another strong month is forecast, with 859,000 new jobs expected to be announced for July, just beating June's equally strong report and well up from the 583,000 new jobs announced in May. Unemployment is forecast to fall from 5.9% to 5.7%, heading towards the Fed's goal of reaching full employment. Over here, the big policy focus is the Bank of England's latest rate-setting meeting. The question facing the bank's policymakers is whether, in the face of a surge in inflation and a strong economic rebound, they should start moving towards a reduction in stimulus by cutting the amount the bank spends on buying bonds, so-called quantitative easing. The recently departed chief economist, Andy Haldane, voted for just such a reduction in May, and he's supported in that by two further rate setters. A split vote is therefore likely, and the spin that the bank's governor puts on that divide will be important. And finally, this week could mark an important turning point in our emergence from the pandemic, with travel restrictions for double-jab travellers from the EU and US being lifted at the start of the week, and further category changes scheduled for later in the week, which could see France brought in from the COVID cold in time for the summer holidays.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. Issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.